shorts and bag.
That's a nasty looking finger, lady.
You got the bait?
What? No.
Hey, I got your fertilizer.
We made you.
Welcome back, interweb friends. This is Stop the Movie. I Want to Get Out. Hollywood makes bad movies. We make fun of them. I'm Alex Dunbar. I'm joined this week by Nick Newart.
This is the worst Whitesnake video I've ever seen.
Jack S.
Jesus! Alex, you scared the shit out of me!
And Cody Wolf.
Everything's dangerous.
Our movie this week, there was some dispute online as to what year this came out. Some sites listed it as 87, some listed it as 86. I believe it is 86.
I have a clarification on that.
I have to check my DVD, it's right over there.
I believe the film was had a limited release on the final day of 1986, December 31st. It had a limited release. And then it had a broader
just to
release.
Just qualify for the Oscars.
For the Oscars.
Just sneak it in. This is, as I understand it, I looked at the Wikipedia because I was curious. And yes, that is true. It was technically released in 86, but
yes,
it had its wide release in 87.
My DVD says 1986 on it.
It had its wide release in 87.
I gotta look at this.
They felt that Todd Allen and Tawny Kitaen both had very strong possibilities of Best Actor nominees. Sadly, not so much.
This is a good-looking DVD, by the way.
There's a Blu-ray now.
I gotta buy it.
Wow.
See, I just watched it on YouTube.
Yeah.
For free.
I bought this on DVD like 12 years ago. So.
And our movie is Witchboard, a movie that is so mid-80s that it will make you scream.
Did I miss somewhere in the movie where they explain why it's called Witchboard? Do they actually refer to it as
a
Witchboard?
I think there's no witchcraft in the film at all.
They're originally going to call it Ouija.
Parker Brothers is going to sue
them? But they were told they couldn't call it that, because not unlike the new movie called Ouija.
Okay.
Which was based on the board game. The game's called Ouija in the movie, but to the actual branding of it had to be Witchboard.
This is nothing. I hear you call it Ouija. They definitely call it that in the movie. I'd always just heard it called a Ouija board
before this movie.
I call it Ouija because of this movie.
It's French and German.
It's from 500 BC, and in 500 BC, they spoke modern French and modern German.
See, I assumed it was like, was this a Canadian production? Yeah. Like, hey. Hey, Doug, sorry about you, but Saturday, come on over. We're going to have some Olsons. Get out the Ouija board. See if we can get a hold of John Candy.
Yeah. I was surprised by that, too. I had always called it Ouija.
So did I.
I did up until I saw this movie, and it changed my life.
It changed my life.
Is that the actual, like, let's get into a little discussion here. Is that the real pronunciation?
I've never
heard it pronounced Ouija except in this movie.
I've heard it beyond this movie called Ouija board, yeah.
Okay. I mean, it makes sense. That's how it's spelled. But I was wondering if maybe Ouija was the appropriate, because that's what everybody called it.
I don't know where Ouija would come from, though.
Now that I think about it, I'm like, that doesn't seem right. Because there's no, yeah.
Right.
And this is us actively trying not to talk about the movie.
Yeah. I have to say, this movie was interesting in a sense of, I'm not gonna say I liked this movie, but there are things about this movie that I appreciated, though it is not a good movie. This movie takes some big swings, and I will credit it for taking some big swings, even though they don't always connect. Because it's whatever this movie is, in many ways, it is not paint by numbers. So I'm right off the top.
I will give it that compliment.
It has a unique story.
It does have a unique story. And it is just, there is just times where it tries some things where I'm like, wow, a crazy 80s low budget movie is trying to do deep emotional drama late in the second act. Okay. You know?
Well, that's my favorite, because Jack and I watched this together, four or five years
ago,
I showed it to him, and that was what we came away with when we watched it together, was that bond and relationship between those two guys in the third act of the movie and how far that goes. It's like,
yeah,
it was bizarre.
It goes places. All right, let's start off with this one. I was telling everyone off mic, I had no memories of seeing this movie. I think I saw it in the 80s. I would have been 11 when this came out, I guess, but I don't remember it. But as soon as the Phantasm-esque score over the opening credits came in, I got concerned. And for people who don't know, my problems with the Phantasm score, it's like four notes played over and over again in a loop that after about 10 seconds, I was just wanted to say, please stop. Please stop.
More notes.
Please stop. Yeah. Yeah. But that score doesn't really come back in the movie. It's just
a couple times it was, yeah, but it's not like a theme that runs through the movie.
It's not Phantasm-esque in that by the end of Phantasm, your brain has been permanently damaged by the score. This is just an opening.
Just like we had to throw together an intense opening thing in like 30 seconds. So here we go.
Yeah.
White text on a black screen with some creepy music.
Yeah. Why is this also, why was this, I guess this is more a compliment on the, or a comment on the 80s. Why was this white text on a screen? They couldn't even just like get some creepy shots of a Ouija board and put like,
they saved them for the end.
Or have the Ouija board spell out the names of like the cast members.
No, the last thing this movie needed was more shots of a Ouija board.
Yeah. And we jump right into a super 80s party.
And I was a little confused here as to who was running the party.
Oh, that's the beginning of the confusion. It's not just confusion who's running it, who anyone is, what anyone's relationship to anyone else is. I'm going to jump ahead a little bit. When Tawny Katane, late in this scene, says, Jim, I love you, I almost fell off. I was like, what? Those two are in a relationship?
I think that surprised him, too.
Well, here's another thing. Like, I'm confused because Stephen Nichols from The Days of Our Lives without his eye patch is with Tawny Katane. He's got his hand on her shoulder. He's sitting next to her on a couch. They're all dressed nice. This is clearly like a preppy party. Like they're wearing nice suits. Everyone looks really nice. And he's sitting there getting into a religious discussion about the creation of the world and how he's an atheist and he believes in science, which is immediately thrown out the window about 6 minutes later when he starts talking about the spiritual realm and contacting spirits through a Ouija board. But anyway, then this other dude,
he's an expert on the matter, it turns out. Like he gets his information,
I have no idea, but
rock solid.
But Todd Allen is antagonizing him, right?
Is Jim.
Yeah. And he's antagonizing him and like calling him out, and they clearly hate each other. Like this is intense hatred. But then 30 seconds later we find out it's his house.
It's Jim.
He's dressed down, he's wearing jeans and a t-shirt. It's his house. His goofy friends come over as if they snuck into the party, and he's dating Tawny Katane. So what? Huh?
This scene, the rhythm of this scene is real crazy. And you're right, because the lawyer character, or the law student character, I can't remember his name, Stephen Nichols, is so antagonistic to Jim. And it's like, you're a guest in his house. Yeah. Like, walk it back a little. I was having so, and again, this is a backhanded compliment. This movie does not do the whole thing where it shows us the planet Earth and then spells everything out in exposition and like delivers everything. It does kind of throw us into a situation, but it's like I needed a little something.
Just something to anchor. Why did you invite why'd you invite that stiff to this party? Oh, come on, he's one of my friends. All right, fine. And they go back out and they tell me about your Ouija board, right? That would have been
one time where if Jim had said to Tawny Katane, hey, why did you invite Brandon to this party? He's a real D-bag. And she was like, oh, come on, you and he used to be best friends. And then Jim could have been like, I know, but I think he still has a crush on you. Done. Good. I'm good at that point. That's all the background we needed.
But are we sure that Tawny Katane is the one that Brandon has the crush on?
Well, by the end of the movie.
Yeah.
There's something going on. There's some subtext going on here. I was just feeling it. That's all I'm saying.
Yeah.
She does for lovers.
She does disappear from the movie for about half an hour at one point. While those two go off on a jaunt.
And I was okay with her disappearing for half an hour.
I would also like to say, we should preface it, Cody is a big fan of this movie. We're looking at his DVD right now.
Big fan in a so bad it's good way. I won't defend it as a good movie.
It is. The next time you're watching it, I don't know if anybody else... In this opening scene, there's a point, there's possibly the greatest edit that I've seen in a movie for this show. Jim is drinking from a bottle of whiskey in the kitchen.
Yeah, I know.
There is a cut to Jim drinking from a bottle of whiskey in the living room. Yeah. These
to show how far down it's gone because he's finishing it up.
My eyes popped involuntarily. I rewound it. It's not the same framing, but it's so close.
It's almost like a jump cut.
Oh my god! Yeah. And this is a very 80s thing, but like. Everyone at this party just seems to be a douche. Jim is a terrible person. Brandon Stephen Nichols is a terrible person. Tawny Kitaen is sort of playing referee, but also doesn't seem to, like, at times...
Trying to stop it.
Yeah, doesn't seem to be trying to stop it. Other people are just like, ha ha ha, look at these two. And it's weird.
Somehow a Ouija board comes out.
Yeah.
And we get schooled on how it's actually pronounced.
Well, yeah, so... Brad or Brandon, or whatever.
Brandon Spencer.
In my head, I named him and Jim Brad and Chad halfway through.
Yeah.
Just because.
We'll call him Brad and Chad.
Yeah.
But, he got invited to this party and then just decided to bring his own Ouija board?
That's strange.
He made it sound like this is what he does, though, like in social settings.
He did. Like he did make it sound like this is his thing. But, I mean, and that's not cool. I don't know.
Yeah.
Maybe if there were like 15.
I mean, this probably should have just been at his house.
Yeah. Well, here's another thought. Couldn't this have been more of like a dinner party? Like,
well, there must have been, because I was just watching the behind the scenes thing, and it looks like there was the making of, but it looks like they showed a little bit of a scene that were basically they're talking about how they just moved into this place.
Okay.
So this must have been like a housewarming party or something.
Oh.
But that must have been a deleted.
Right. Okay.
Because there's a scene of, because they actually use the dialogue when... they go in the bedroom and it cuts out to the living room and she says something like, oh, why do I love you so much? And he says something like, I make you laugh, and Woody Allen or whatever. That was from that scene. They used the audio.
That scene has not aged well.
They're in the kitchen and they're like, oh, you know, I'm so excited to move into this place with you and blah, blah, blah. So this must be a housewarming party, but they don't really establish that at all.
Okay.
Because it just seems like, it's like Jim is very reluctant to have a party at all in his with these people in his own house. So
yeah,
it's like his girlfriend's friends.
Yeah,
that makes sense.
Yeah,
I thought this would have made a lot more sense if the roles had been reversed, and if the Jim character were the ex lover and his old best friend. They both came from nothing. His best friend Brandon Nichols came out. Stephen Nichols. They came from nothing. He ends up getting some scholarship. Goes to law school, gets some job. Now he's got money, and now he's got the girl that his buddies always wanted, and that's created this rift. I think that would have made a little more sense. He shows up to the party drunk, uninvited, but they figure, well, he used to be a friend. Let's just, you know, we'll see if we can smooth things over, and then things escalate.
That's not bad. I don't know. It also just would have been better if at least one, if not both of the characters was somewhat relatable. Was not openly awful. You know?
In this scene.
I feel like
they go from like wanting to murder each other to being like. Then you find out their past. Like they were, his family practically raised me, man. When my parents were never around because they were always drunk, and he was such a good friend to me. Dude, in the first scene of the movie, he's like, yeah, you're a drunk just like your dad. Run away like your daddy did. And I'm like, whoa, given that, finding out later that backstory, like...
I was saying that last night.
The Brandon character really is a piece of shit.
Once they make up towards the end, you're like, but he still said all those awful things about you and your family, but...
Yeah. So they bust out a Ouija board and they're contacting. I mean, man, Brandon is just—he is a faucet of exposition throughout this movie. I mean, when he speaks, you listen because it's going to be pure exposition.
And delivers it so like intense and cool. You're like, okay.
Yeah. That made me think as I laughed at that a little bit during the 80s. I'm like, oh man, that guy's so cool. He's got a Ouija board
and a mullet.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
Actually, my wife pointed out to me, she didn't come into like halfway through the movie. And she sees that guy and she goes, you know, he looks a lot like Roddy Piper. And now it's all I can see. For the rest of the movie, I kept on waiting for Keith David to show up. But sadly, he didn't.
No sunglasses were forced on any character in this movie.
And how does this work? Cody, take us through.
So they're playing the board. He explains that basically each board has like a spirit attached to it or something like that. And the spirit that's attached to his board is this 10-year-old boy named David, who he talks to a lot. So he said, I'm going to contact David. And they contacted Spirit, but he's like, oh, wait, no, that's not David because we have a special signal, so I know it's him.
Wait, wait, everyone in the room should have been like, Brandon, you have a special signal with a 10-year-old boy you communicate yes. with regularly. Yeah, I got to go home. This party's over. Yeah, but
So they try again. He goes through this whole thing where they have to be sitting with the board on their knees. So he does it with Tony Katane. They have to have it on their knees for more contact or whatever. And so he tries again and he gets David. He knows David because the planchette is going in a figure eight pattern. And that's their special signal.
Yeah.
So they somehow get it talking about reincarnation. And Jim, okay, yeah. So I can't remember exactly what their questions were. But Jim is getting aggravated and he's making jokes and he's drunk and whatever. And so he's like making fun of the ghost. And so the ghost gets angry and it stops. The planchette stops. And then you hear like an explosion outside and Brandon's tires have all blown up.
They've been slashed.
Yeah.
I haven't known anyone like a ghost slashed his tire. Like that's right. Seems like not a very ghostly thing to do. No. But
and why would he was angry slash because, his tires?
Because he was the one with using the board. He was the one in contact.
Takes responsibility.
Right. So Jim had pissed the ghost off and the ghost slashed Brandon's tires.
Yeah.
So Brandon gets really angry and he like blames Jim, whatever, and he takes off.
Yeah.
So the party's over at that point because that's a downer. So then it goes to them.
And there goes the Ouija board.
Yeah. Mm. So then it goes to.
No party.
To, and this is something that always makes me laugh because it goes to Jim and Tony Katane in their bedroom, like getting ready for bed, and she's like really angry at him because he ruined the party because he was, even though Brandon was being a total dick to him this whole time. And he was just like joking around, having a good time. He's drunk. It was a party, whatever. She's like really angry. But I always laugh because she's a bad actor, she has to like yell her emotions. So at one point, she literally goes, I am so furious right now. It's like, thank you for clearing that up because I couldn't tell.
Yeah, her whole acting range seems to be various shades of giving an incredulous look.
Yeah.
Like
yeah.
just kind of looking, not quite confused, but just.
I felt for Tawny Katane too, in that the script is not doing her any favors.
Mm-hmm. Oh no!
And there are points as this movie goes on where she is really like just given a bag of crap and told to deliver it, and yeah. like, and I felt for her. I don't know, this is a mess, and it's or it's I just feel like it's right not at all the end. On her. It's, yeah.
She was doing all right at the end when she was swinging the axe.
I didn't think she was bad in that scene. No.
That was the one scene where I actually thumb myself going, good.
Yeah, I thought that was the worst.
Sure. Oh, really?
Oh, yeah. Oh, my God.
Well, this movie also suffers from, it is the flattest, maybe the worst shot film. Like purely from a cinematography standpoint, this is...
Lighting.
And this is also very 80s in that... The lighting is flat.
Yeah.
They were shooting like they're shooting in small rooms.
Yeah.
Like there's no separate like
I guess it's pretty bland.
Everything looks like they're shooting on a very small version of the Price is Right set lighting was like brought in.
Sure.
And that also I think hurts this movie in several scenes. Weirdly, they seem to have put quite a bit of effort into that very short graveyard scene, which looks quite a bit better, but that's the only scene in the movie where they seem to have taking time with the lighting.
Yeah. So when they were doing the Ouija thing, they were talking about reincarnation, and Tony Katane asked if the spirit could pick their parents when they come back to life. So that kind of comes back in a little bit. But so it's revealed that Brandon, because he left in such a huff, left his Ouija board at the house. So
missing out on the great opportunity to say, that's it, I'm taking my Ouija board and going home.
So then I think it goes to the next day when Jim's at work.
Oh, this begins the saga of the missing hammer.
The missing hatchet hammer, yeah.
Hatchet hammer.
So he's at work with his buddy who's at the party. Because there's two of his buddies, we didn't mention. Two of his construction buddies were at the party. And they're like, you know, just the guys who are dressed down are obnoxious and whatever. They didn't fit in with the rest of the guests.
Serious question, what's going on with the buddy in this scene? Because he seemed like a relatively normal person at the party, but in this scene, he seems to be an alien from another planet. I what is there something was, I'm missing?
He
there?
Was drunker at work than he was at the party.
Probably. Maybe that's
or it. when he's drunk, he acts sober and vice versa.
He was real weird in this scene, wasn't he?
He was.
Yeah.
Okay, like he was trying to do something. Like he's trying to be a character or so.
He was imitating like the little boy ghost or something. I don't remember. There's like making some voice.
I couldn't make sense of what.
Well, was he's going making because he's making fun of Brandon for believing in the ghost stuff.
Okay.
Because Jim says something. They're fighting or they're joking around because this is one thing that always makes me laugh too because ridiculous is. So Jim's like he's like I can't find my hatchet hammer. So he's like looking, and all of a sudden a hatchet comes flying in the frame.
Oh, yeah,
and
yeah.
Like sticks into
inches
a,
from
yeah,
his face.
Inches from Jim's face.
Yeah.
And it cuts to the friend. He's like, oh, you can borrow mine. And so guy's just like, oh, I'm going to kill you. And so the friend goes like, oh, no, because then I would come back as a spirit and haunt you and like making fun of Brandon.
Yeah.
But then so they go outside and they're like sending out like a bunch of sheetrock, whatever, and talking you see a shot of the hatchet hammer on top of some sheetrock that's hanging above them. And then there's Jim gets up and he like walks away and then the sheetrock falls and kills the friend.
Yeah.
And here's where we get the backstory that Jim and Brandon basically grew up together, right? Isn't this the
same? Oh, yeah.
Went to medical school.
Right. Which you learn about a lot about Jim right here.
Yeah. This is where I started to kind of begrudgingly like give this movie some credit because I'm like, whoa, that's sort of a twist in otherwise dumb movie.
So at the same time Tawny Katane was using the Ouija board at home asking it questions and she got a message on her phone from a doctor saying we have the results for your test, call us back. So she asked the Ouija board like, am I pregnant? And it says yes. And then she's like, will you be my child? And it says no. And then it like stops talking to her. And then it goes, that's when the friend
because
gets
the
killed.
Ghost was probably rightfully creeped out. Like, lady, we just met.
So then the friend gets killed.
Back, yeah.
The friend gets killed and goes back to her and it starts moving again.
Yeah.
And it gives her some information and tells her lost ring is in the trap of the kitchen or the bathroom sink so that she'll believe him or whatever.
Right.
So she goes and gets the ring out of the trap.
And pretty soon in here, we meet the character who I'm fascinated by and yet doesn't need to be in this movie at all.
Mm-hmm.
Police investigator Dewhurst.
Who likes magic.
Who, honest to God, once I saw him, I kind of went, is that Leslie? For a brief moment, I thought it was Leslie Nielsen. I honest to God did.
Yeah.
And I just started imagining a better movie where it's Frank Drebin investigating the death.
I mean, it's basically what it is.
Well, it kind of is what it is because he is not, this character is not of this movie.
Yeah.
Like, he is coming in from another film.
He literally.
And like popping in and then going back to another movie.
Right.
There was something.
He's a detective investigating what he thinks is a murder because he's investigating the death of the friend. But you never see him do any investigating or detecting. Or asking anybody questions besides Jim. He's always just
and
like
his questions
pops up.
Are, do you like magic?
Right. He pops up as well magic.
To, like, intimidate him or something.
He keeps making vague references to his hatchet.
Yeah.
And then he like watches him from his car, and that's like all you ever see him do.
Yeah.
Until the end.
And it's so like people should watch for this scene, his first scene where he just talks about magic for, I don't know, 3 minutes.
Oh, and this is all like at the graveside, too.
Right.
Just really
right after the funeral.
Yeah, and I felt like there were some like producer or studio notes. Like the script must have been reworked because at one point then, and this happens a couple other times in the movie where they're talking around something. Like there is a little creativity, even though sometimes it's strange.
Mm-hmm.
But then they just put a nail on it where. Jim says to Inspector Dewhurst, hey, we're not really talking about magic, are we? And I'm like, yeah, no kidding. No kidding.
That long. This guy went to med school and that's,
yeah.
Hey, wait a minute. You're not talking about magic.
Yeah.
Well, he has to spell it out for Tawny Katane because she's clearly confused.
That's right.
Yeah.
That's right. And the big reveal that the Detective Dewhurst knows the ropes were cut. Like, which should be much more concerning to Jim. It is of really no concern to Jim, even though even the detective is like, do you think maybe someone was trying to kill you? Or like there were only two of you on this site and the ropes were cut. And all he's right. Just like, well, I don't know. You know, it's an accident.
Yeah. Well, because the whole, it's all based on the fact that the rope seemed to be cut with a hatchet.
Right.
And his hatchet was missing. But it's like, why would he, like, get rid of his hatchet if he cut the ropes with his hatchet and then make himself, everyone there has a hatchet.
Right.
Why, like, why would that be a thing that would make you suspicious?
Yeah.
That he cut the ropes so that they wouldn't fall immediately, but fall exactly when he was, had the friend out there and was sitting next to him, but then got up just in time for the, it was just, it's like such a flimsy.
I would have really liked to have read Detective Dewhurst's file on this, or like his reports to his supervisors on what he believed the crime was.
Yeah.
And Jim then goes home, and we get, Jim has really, I would say, two dominant character traits. One is he loves sneaking up on people.
Oh God!
I mean, he loves it
for like the
this
second time.
This happens virtually every scene.
He does it twice to Brandon in one scene, and that's when I realized like he does this too much.
He is crazy about sneaking up on people.
At least five or six times in this film, he does it.
Not to mention that other people don't like it. I laughed. I was sitting in my own basement, like in tears, after Tawny Katane screams at him, "God damn it! How many times have I told you not to sneak up on me?"
And that was the second time he did it to her.
And I, after seeing the movie, I'm like, he must do this every day.
Yeah. Is this like a criticism on jump scares in films, or is this just the filmmakers wanting to jump scare you and they're failing at it?
They weren't really jump scares to the audience, though. They were just scaring the characters in the movie.
Not really scared.
Yeah.
I enjoyed that.
Yeah.
Maybe it was an attempt at humor that didn't land.
Tawny Katane is just very skittish.
She is.
But literally in that one coming up in the graveyard, he does it twice in one scene to Brandon.
And both times Brandon's like, damn it!
It's like, chill out, guy.
Somewhere in here we did get the weird dream sequence, which like whoever financed the movie must have been like, all right, so if we're casting that lady from the White Snake videos, we're going to need something that's a little misty, a little kind of sexy, but like
backlit,
looks like a music video. Like, I basically need you to have the shots that look like they should be in a White Snake video in this movie.
But I was upset that she didn't have a t-shirt on that said Dream.
Oh, that's right.
Monster Dog.
Yeah. And somewhere in here, and Cody, you can talk to us a little better, but it's, I just start having notes where I'm like, man, Jim is a dumbass. And Brandon, who is a D-bag, but just has all the answers.
Yeah,
just,
I feel like within the movie, Jim looks like a dumbass, but as, like, if he's a normal, if this is real life, he's like the only one who's not a dumbass. Like, he's like, you keep talking to me about Ouija boards and spirits and stuff. My friend just got killed. My girlfriend is acting insane. Why are you talking to me? I'm, you know, coming to my job site and talking to me about Ouija boards and stuff. So basically, Tawny Katane is convinced that she's pregnant because the spirit told her where her ring was so she could trust him. So she, because the spirit told her she was pregnant, she's pregnant.
She tells the doctor, who said she had an appointment the next day or something.
I mean, Jim, I could go to the doctor, but they're just going to do the same thing.
Right.
They're going to have me talk to the spirit and ask it if I'm pregnant.
Yeah. And then they did that. Bucks. So she tells Jim this, and there's this thread through the movie where she keeps saying, I love you, to him, and he keeps saying, I know, in a very Han Solo-esque way.
Yes.
And so she tells him, and she's like, you know, he's like, oh, that's why, because she's been acting kind of crazy and all this stuff. He's like, oh, that's why you've been so on edge, because you're pregnant. And you know, it'll be okay. We'll get through it. You know, it'll be fine. She's like, oh, I love you. He's like, yeah, I know. Like, even then he will say it. So then she was supposed to bring the Ouija board to Brandon, but she didn't because she went to the funeral. So Brandon comes to, because he finds out through her that she's been using the Ouija board on her own, which is dangerous, and that opens her up to being possessed and all this stuff. So he goes to the construction site where Jim is working, and he starts asking her, like, oh, has she been moody? Has she been swearing? Has she been this and that? And he's like, yeah, how'd you know? And he's like, I think those are symptoms of her being possessed because of the Ouija board. And he's like, they're also symptoms of pregnancy, and she's pregnant. So then they get in this whole fight where I think he's again attacking about his parents. He's like, because
you're going to run away like your parents did, drunk.
So he's like pounding nails in the drywall, and he's like, you know, your parents are drunks and you're a drunk and you're a terrible. And he's like pounding, pounding, pounding. Like, And he gets a call from like his supervisor that says like, oh, your wife or your landlord's on the phone and something happened with your wife. Because in a scene before, she was, I can't remember. She was on the Ouija board and she ended
they're
up.
They're not married.
I'm sorry, married. Not wife. Her girlfriend.
Yeah.
Because in the scene previous or like during this, she was using the Ouija board again at
you're
home.
You're going to ruin the twist ending if you call her, yeah, call her his wife now.
That is a twist at the end. That got me the first time I saw it though.
It got me for like 3 seconds. I was like, wait a second.
Something's going on here. But so she's using the board on her own and the spirit is starting to be more nasty to her. And she's like confused, like, why are you treating me like this, David? And then it like cuts to outside and you hear her scream. So something happened, but they're not going
to
show it.
I think she's like locked in the room and doesn't she like try to open the door and because she's locked in, she just freaks out and that's the scream. I seem to remember at one point she's locked inside.
Well, they do like a POV like ghost shot. So
so clearly like she's experienced something.
Yeah, there's something happened, but they don't show
it.
Because
like a vision or something.
Yeah, you just kind of see her writhing around a little bit.
Yeah.
Kind of actually like a Whitesnake video.
Yeah.
It's kind of like a slower version of that video, but instead of a car, you're in a room.
And there's absence of guitar solo, so she had to scream instead.
Yeah.
So then he gets a call from the landlady, and Lenny is like, yeah, she freaked out, whatever. He doesn't bring her to the hospital yet. I'm trying to remember what happens.
I think they do. Or do they bring her to the hospital?
No, that's after she, like, freaks out and she, like, hits her head against the wall or whatever.
Okay.
That's a little later on.
Okay.
There was a freak out before that. Yeah. Well, how did they solve that one?
I think he just comes and gets... Oh, so he like, puts her to... Oh, okay.
Is this the one where he kicks the door in?
I'm sorry. This is what happens. So I'm just replaying this movie in my head. So as they were talking, Jim and Brandon, Brandon's like, I want to bring a medium to your house.
Try
to get the spirit, exercise the spirit from your wife or whatever. And he's like, no. And then he gets a phone call and he realizes like, so, okay, something is weird. And he's like, okay, bring the medium tonight. So that's when you get the best psychic in the history of
Northern California. First off, the best actress in the movie, I feel.
Yes.
Best acting. All right. Still an annoying character for the most part.
Well,
but by far the most enjoyable.
She was the only character I enjoyed watching.
Really. She was the most enjoyable by far.
Yes.
Well, the actress playing the medium in a very 80s way is just takes it to 11. Like, I'm going to go to 11 for all my lines.
Mm-hmm.
I'm
it's
going
like a,
to, you know.
She is like a distillation of the 80s. Like,
yes.
It's,
yeah. Yeah. Yeah, she is going big on in everything. Like, they're like
80s punk rock look.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you're right. From
very
costume
similar
design to
like,
everything, subtlety, all subtlety was taken out. Mm-hmm. Like, we're just going to extremes on in every way.
86,
we can.
So it's the height of the 80s.
Okay. Yeah.
Yeah, the height of cocaine.
Well, I felt because she's basically a comic relief character. So throughout this whole scene, I felt like there was a laugh track that was supposed to be that was missing because she was like throwing these jokes out there, then like no one said or did anything for like 5 whole seconds, and then she like say another goofy thing, and then like no one said anything.
And then she had to acknowledge
was, like,
that it was a joke.
Yeah,
it
was very odd.
I don't know that, and this is one of the issues I have with this movie is like, I'm not sure this character should have been a comic relief character. I think the comic relief should have come from somewhere else because it very much undermines, I don't know, like this, like at its core, I think this movie actually has a creepy story. Like the core of this movie's story is kind of creepy and it kind of made me think and is like, oh man, that's kind of weird. But they kind of like, shoveled dirt over that by bringing in this like character like actor as like this medium, because like this is maybe the person who could have grounded the movie, and instead it's kind of the person who takes it to like a ridiculous level.
Well, everybody else in the movie is so super serious. Like Jim kind of gets goofy sometimes, but like Tony Katane is like super dramatic and serious, and Brandon is super like, I mean, my God.
Oh, my God.
I'm kind of curious how the medium and Brandon even met to the point where there's enough of a relationship between the two of them that he's like, I need you to swing by my buddy's house.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, Brandon doesn't smile until like... like an hour in this movie.
Oh,
he's
yeah.
serious. And so you kind of totally tits. It's nice to have like a little comedic relief character, but she's only like one scene in the middle of the movie and then she's gone.
Yeah.
And it's like so intense with the comedic relief that it's like, okay, back off a little bit.
And she does like delivers this line to Brandon after this medium, because she kind of does this thing where she how does it work? Who, so David goes into her, or David speaks through her? Is that what they do in the?
The idea is that David is supposed to be speaking through her, and during the seance, channeling the spirit of David, he basically says that he's like in love with Tawny Katane and that he doesn't want to leave, and but you've been terrorizing her, you have to go, but I don't like Jim, but Jim doesn't apologize for saying the jerk things he said at the party that made him slash Brandon's tires, and but he's got to leave anyway. And then right before he leaves the medium, Tawny Katane's like, no, stay. And this creates this weird scenario where there's like wind and lights flashing. And
well, that happened because she got out of her chair, which she was warned about. Oh, Don't get out of your seat.
Do not get your seat. Yeah.
And then knocks over the cans that they set up for some reason just to get knocked over. Like that was...
Yeah,
they prepared the room, and one of the preparations was set up like a tower of cans.
Yeah,
and the only purpose is like
it was like a dorm room
beer can tower.
Luckily, he had all his cans because he's a drunk.
Jim is a third passion: can collecting.
So they go through a seance, and that's basically what they get out of it. Is the spirit says like, I'll leave, so you don't exorcise me or whatever. So that's the end of it, and they go, okay, let's go home, bring me home or whatever.
And Brandon brings her home, and at one point she just kind of is like, hey, who's this? And like drops some other
Malfader.
What does this word mean?
Yeah.
And Brandon is
an expert. My God, that's Portuguese.
Yeah. Brandon, it seems like everything else.
What?
Yeah. And she's just like, yeah, something weird's going on. Anyway, I'll look into it, and I'll
TTFN.
TTFN.
She's doing the... For texting. Right?
That's true. Yeah. Talk to you. What's it like? Oh,
Ta-ta
TTYL.
For now.
It's
Tigger. You don't know Tigger?
Exactly. I knew what it was before they even explained it. I was like, obviously a Pooh Bear fan.
So, and this is one of the things that, another thing in this movie that is like, they didn't even, I'll get to this. So she goes inside.
Yep.
And, I can't remember. She opens a book because she's like looking up this word or whatever. She got some weird vibes from the seance, and she sees like a picture of a guy who comes back later. But she's looking, kind of concerned about this, whatever. And then she gets like this feeling that something's in the room with her. So you get the POV shot of the spirit like chasing her around. But this always makes me laugh because they made no effort whatsoever to hide the shadow of the cameraman.
Oh, yeah.
That's chasing her around.
Oh, yeah.
So you get...
The ghost like, could have had a shadow.
Yeah, but it's like you could tell it's like a steady cam and like a full-on like shadow of a cameraman. Chases her up into her room. So she like locks the door, shuts the ghost out, and like waiting for the ghost to come through the door. And then it just cuts to like the other side of her. And the ghost is like the POV shots from this side now. Like it just came into the room.
Like she has a medium like, is like... It's not like a ghost can get through that door. Right. I'm good. You know?
Right.
Yeah.
So then you see an axe come into the frame and it like slits her throat and she gets like pushed out the window.
And lands on a random spiked like a garbage can?
Well, it was a sundial. They had set that up when she walks in.
It's like,
I was like, why did we just get a random close up of a sundial?
And then, she has this really drawn out death where she's literally like, and the thing is like sticking through her back, and like she would have just dead instantly. Yeah. She had to take it to 11. I give her some creds for that. That's an epic death scene.
I was confused by ghost powers in this movie
because
they're very Amityville esque in that there are the ghost can basically just go anywhere. Are there rules? Maybe there aren't.
You'd have to ask Brandon.
Yeah,
he knows.
Yeah. He would know. Yeah,
I don't think there are because I mean, you find out later the ghost killed some other people.
Yeah,
like in some other town.
Yeah,
I don't think there are. But he keeps using. Apparently, he keeps using the hatchet that has gone missing from.
So does that mean like the hatchet's just floating somewhere, and whenever the ghost wants to come out, it's just kind of like the hatchet comes out?
I think so, because jumping ahead a little bit, that when Brandon has killed the hatchet, I'm like, where'd the hatchet come from? Like it would have just had to have been a floating hatchet,
or is it like a psychic? Like is it made of like ectoplasm? When after he uses it, it dissipates.
No, because the hatchet is physically missing.
Yeah, it's the center of Detective Dewhurst's investigation.
That's true.
Yeah. All right, so then there's like a whole thing. Brandon wakes up. They're talking about the medium's death on the news. he's pretty concerned. He's like, you know, Brandon goes to Jim and he's freaking out, and Jim's just like, I don't know if I buy all this. And it's like, hey, man. Like, also, like, Tawny Katane is telling him essentially the same things right. that Brandon like, is telling him.
Like, up until this point, I see Jim's point. Like, oh, these people are nuts.
Right. Yeah.
But at that point, oh, man, maybe there's something, I guess.
Yeah.
And it's where they kind of start making up, because he can tell he's really, Brandon's really concerned for Tawny Katane, and he's, you know, he's not telling him he's a drunk anymore. He's just concerned about helping his girlfriend.
Yeah. It's no longer just about personal attacks.
Right. Yeah.
Because I love the breakdown that Brandon has here too, because he's like, I'm going up to Big Bear where David was from so that I can find out about him or whatever, more about him.
Yeah.
And so Brandon's like, You're really going up there? And Brandon, or Jim says, you're really going up there? And Brandon like breaks down. He's like, starts crying. He's like, yes, I have to do it. It's like, you can tell he's like, yeah. doesn't watch her. He's like terrified. He's like, I gotta do it.
Yeah. And I hate camping.
There is just and as this movie keeps going, there is this growing, in my opinion, this growing tension between these two men. I think that this is, they're not fighting over the same girl. Well, I mean, I think that their true emotions are,
Jim is,
there is something
scene,
to that.
So.
It's just where it's, I mean, why not just go with
there is a tension there that you kind of, the scene in the motel room, it's kind of like, yeah,
these guys are in love with each other.
It just a 5-degree shift, and you could it could be a very different ending.
Mm-hmm. Just need to take a little vacation up to Big Bear, and so.
And this is, by the way, this is where at one point Jim looks out a window.
Well, it's right here, yeah.
And Detective Dewhurst is sitting in his car. Weirdly,
is he eating chips or something?
I think he's eating oranges.
Lined up on his dashboard. I'm
it's
like,
gonna be there for a while.
Yeah, I guess that's what it's meant to imply. But like, vary your diet, dude. get something else.
Well, see, oranges. You know, he can work on his sleight of hand and juggling.
Yeah.
Actually, later in the hospital, we do see him trying to practice
juggling. He must have been working on that routine.
So he was actually setting up the juggling practice later on.
He's honestly like, he should introduce himself as like, hi, I'm, you know, Sam Dewhurst, vaudeville police officer, you know.
Well, he kind of does, actually, in his introduction, now that I think about it.
Yeah.
Yeah, the one homicide detective, bomb squad, and truant officer.
So he's looking at the cop outside, and he hears Tawny Katane start freaking out in the other room. So he goes in, and she's full out, just like Linda Blair, flying around the room, and he's like trying to like stop her, and she ends up like flinging against the wall and hitting her head and falling unconscious. So he like yells for help, and all these people come in. I think the cop comes running in too.
I think so.
Good
to hear, landlady Rose Marie from the Dick Van Dyke Show.
Yeah, and I was like, wait a minute, what? Like her name's in the credits. And I'm like, what's she doing in this movie?
I didn't recognize her without the patch.
Yeah.
So obviously it looks, they don't really delve into it too much, but it looks like he just beat her.
Knocked
her unconscious because the nurses, the doctors, whoever at the hospital don't seem concerned. Like, well, she must have taken quite the fall. And he's like, yeah,
she fell.
I was like,
the '80s were a different time. It's best we leave them behind us.
So yeah, they take her to the hospital. She's unconscious, and so he's like, and the cop is there, kind of still berating him. And like Nick said, he's moved on to juggling at this point.
Oh yeah, like he's just sitting in the waiting room. Like,
it's like, you know what's good about juggling?
I mean, I also like proving that this is an 80s movie. It's the waiting room for a hospital, and Jim's just like chain smoking. Just like,
The cop at one point says to her, and I had to write this down because he's talking about the medium, his medium's death, and he goes, yeah, her throat matched the ropes that were cut at the work site. Okay, that's not how forensics works. You cannot match a throat to a cut rope.
Yeah, that struck me too.
I also had a note here where I'm like, if this movie is going to be, was like, there's like a 2.5-hour cut of this movie, the detective is going to come into one scene on like a unicycle.
I'm joining the circus. We totally got this case against you, but I'm going to have it thrown out because I'm joining the circus.
Wait, are we sure we're not talking about that Bond movie? I think you're thinking.
I was just thinking Octopus.
I'm
thinking of Roger Moore,
Clowns were big at that time.
So Jim decides, like, well, she's unconscious, so I'm gonna meet up with Brandon and go to Big Bear with him.
Yeah.
So he takes off, which again looks pretty suspicious if you're the cop, because he's like, already looks like he beat her, and now he's like, I'm gonna take off now.
The two guys who knew this medium just headed to Big Bear.
So they take off, and Brandon's convertible, and they literally, this conversation is like useless because he's like, what are we going to do? What's he say? He's like, where are we going to start when we get up there? And he's like, the library. And he's like, why? And why not? I was like, okay.
Yeah.
This could have given us something there. But.
Well, this straight up becomes a buddy cop movie.
Oh, yeah.
Bear for a little bit.
Yeah.
Which I love. And it is this movie, I have a note. I'm like, quickly we get a library, microfiche, a phone book, a phone booth. We are just getting immersed into like,
this is how people found stuff back in the day. Yeah. All you millennials, you have it so good.
This is great. And we also found out in here that the nurse tells Tawny Kitaine that she's not pregnant.
Oh, she tells that to Jim. Oh, because Jim asks, that's
okay.
Right.
Is the baby okay? Because
she comes out and she's like, yeah, she had a mild concussion. Right. She must have taken a pretty good fall. And he's like, how's the baby? And she's like, well, she didn't come to see us or we would have told her, but she's not pregnant. And he's like, but she's been having morning sickness. And she's like, well, it doesn't matter. She's not pregnant.
Yeah.
So, I don't know if Tawny Kitaine ever finds that out. If anyone tells her.
Well, she would have to have, like, off screen, like, at the end of the movie. But, yeah.
She never mentions it, though.
Yeah, it's not that important.
Yeah.
They tried to tell her, and she just looked incredulous. Yeah.
I was wondering if she was going to give birth to a spirit baby, and that was what was going on here. Like, this evil spirit was trying to be reborn again.
I mean, that
but she's not pregnant, so what the hell? Where the hell were they going with that?
It would have been a better movie. Yeah. Sadly, it was not this movie.
Yeah, that's actually a creepy idea.
I think the ghost was just using that to manipulate her into opening up more or whatever. But
yeah,
so they go up to Big Bear and they're looking at in the library at the microfiche and they find an article saying like, oh, David Simpson or whatever died in a boat accident at 10 years old. So like, oh, this is him. We have to find his parents so we can ask questions about him. I can't remember
what
they're trying
to find
out.
Like, what are you going to ask the parents? Right.
I would like to see an alternate
version of the movie with... Yeah, okay. We will meet the parents.
My name's Jim.
Yeah.
This is my friend Brandon.
He's been talking with your son a lot. Knows a lot about your son.
We've got some questions for you. Let's start with your son. Is he dead? Oh, yes? Okay.
So he could be a ghost.
Jim, did you have any follow-ups? No?
Do you have a Ouija
I guess
board?
That's it, actually, folks. Thank you.
So they go, and that's where you get the phone book, where he's looking through the phone book, and he gets angry. He's like, I can't find him in this phone book. And he, like, throws it.
Intense.
Yeah. So then they go.
You could take an eye out with that phone book.
Then the most ridiculous part is where Jim's like, well, we can go to the cemetery because the caretaker might have their information on an invoice. So then they go to the cemetery at like midnight.
for some reason.
Seems shocked that the cemetery is closed.
Yeah. Even though when they had this conversation, presumably in the same town, it was, 6 o'clock in the afternoon, in the evening or whatever.
Yeah,
so I don't know.
It took like 5 hours to get to the cemetery.
Yeah.
He was buried in their ancestral homeland.
Yeah. So here's where you get the first scare where he scares Brandon, because Brandon's like waiting in his car, like, oh, where is he? And he like comes out and pops up. And he's like, oh, sorry, man. He's like, the caretaker's not home. No one's here. It's midnight. So while we're here, I'm gonna jump in and check out David's grave. He's like, no, don't do that. There's no reason to do that. He's like, I'm doing it. So he jumps the fence into the cemetery. And so Brandon's sitting out there like, oh, I guess I go in. So he goes in too. He jumps to the wall. And he's like searching around the cemetery for Jim,
and he is freaking out.
Yeah, he's
really
out of his mind.
Like losing his shit. And then he's on the verge of tears before Jim scares him.
He needs Jim's strong arms to protect him in the darkness.
He got the December 31st release.
Yeah.
So then Jim jumps out again, scares him again, and he's like, "Don't do that to me, man." Jim's like laughing, like, "Oh, I'm so sorry."
I know people are always telling me.
Okay, and I do have to say,
I don't know how to enter a conversation other than that.
As I started watching the movie yesterday morning, we have a group Facebook chat going on, little behind the scenes and how the podcast works, and I just, for the first hour, I hated this movie. But it was around this, once they get up to Big Bear, that's where I started to kind of soften up. I'm like, okay, there are some enjoyable, not intentionally so, but I'm getting some enjoyment out of this movie now. It is for things like this.
Yeah, the second half or act, whatever.
It definitely comes together in the second, yeah. Was anyone else surprised? Because the big reveal is then Jim's like, hey, let me show you. Look, David's parents are also dead.
Yeah.
Craig makes a joke about it. He's like, hey, someone you got to meet. Look, David's dead parents.
Now, here's where it gets really confusing. He says they died at the same time.
At the same day.
Right? The same day. So they must have been killed by a spirit.
But
Malfader is supposed to have done it. Would not their deaths have been incredibly recent, like within the last 2 weeks?
I thought it did say that it was within the last week.
He said it was like 2 weeks ago, yeah.
Okay. Did anybody else, surprised that there was ultimately no scare in this graveyard? Like, they seemed to be he did get a scare. They seemed to be building up to like, something else happening. Mm-hmm. And then the scene just ends, and I'm like, oh, okay. Like, that's it. Jim was the only scare in this.
Scary things only seem to happen, like, in broad daylight in this movie.
That's true.
Not in the creepy cemetery where you would hope it would happen.
At night or in a creepy cemetery. Right. Yeah, actually, that's true.
But on a dock in the middle of the day.
Yeah.
That's when it happens.
In a well-lit, small apartment in the middle of the day.
Right.
Yeah.
So, somewhere along here, you get to Tawny Katane leaving the hospital. And the doctor's like, no, you shouldn't leave. We still want to run some tests. We don't know what's wrong with you.
First off, you're skipping past what I feel is the best effects shot in the movie.
Which one of those?
Her dream sequence in the hospital.
Oh, the
which, and it also has maybe like the one thing I'd kind of qualify as a jump scare in the movie.
Mm-hmm.
And even then, if watching the movie, it's not much of a scare because you see her reflection.
Right.
It's her catching her own reflection. She jumps,
turns
around. And there's the bearded guy that was in the book the medium was looking at. He then takes a swipe at her head, and the worst mannequin effects I've seen in an actual released movie.
Yeah, he just knocks it off.
Yeah.
It's just, that is a pretty bad one.
I had to watch that particular bit like three or four times.
Knocks it off. I mean, it's just literally like, knocks it off. Yeah. Like, there's no,
there's no blood. No, like, it's no real effects work.
So she leaves the hospital because at some point Jim says something like, "Well, I'm okay being up here with her because I know she's safe in the hospital." Then it cuts to her kind of leaving the hospital.
Right. Yeah. She is not safe in the hospital.
She's like, "No, I feel better. I'm leaving." So she leaves.
I think this, so is, this here is where the hotel scene. This is the hotel where we see.
Yes.
You know, as we said, Jim loves sneaking up on people. He loves collecting beer cans, and he loves cracking wise. Because here he's like, oh, I got to go buy a toothbrush. I don't like talking to ghosts with plaque on my teeth. Ha, ha, ha.
Yeah, sure.
There's a lot of bad shit going down, man.
Like, that's why he wants his toothbrush, because he's worried about what, you know, the girls are going to think about his breath. Not because of Brandon, of course.
Yeah. And the big breakthrough in this movie is they are... Somehow Jim gets Brandon to laugh. I don't even know why. Or like, the walls come down a little bit.
Because he says, he's like, oh, I don't get it. Like, what did she see in you that she didn't see in me?
That's right.
And he's like, I made her laugh. And Brandon's like, so did I. He's like, yeah, but only in the bedroom. Yeah. And there's this moment where they're both like super serious. And then Brandon gets really sad. And then they both start laughing.
And then, so then they take that moment, which again, I'm like, okay, like this movie's trying to go places.
And he sort of apologizes.
Then there's another one where they're like, where they go, oh, why are we laughing? Oh, it helps us forget how scared we are. I'm like, guys, why did we have to put that button on?
I half expected the next scene to be the two of them waking up in bed under a sheet with their shirts off. Like, I mean, that's where this is going.
And then it gets,
so why not do it?
Yeah, it gets real deep and emotional about, like, Jim's fear of commitment and... Brandon's
it's almost like a scene out of another
like alienating
movie.
His friend and
I mean, this is almost like a St. Elmo's Fire-esque movie like happening in a horror film. I was like, all right, you're like, most 80s horror films don't have the guts to try something like this, so I'll give you some credit for it. It's kind of funky. Is the next thing, I'm looking at this on Wikipedia. I think this is where...
So this is where they go to the dock, right?
Yes, this is where they go
so
to the dock.
So they go to the dock because...
Which I think is... Did Brandon have to know where Danny died so that they could be sure that they were going to... David.
Yeah.
Were they sure where David died so that they could channel him like near where he died? Was that the reason why?
Because the connection is stronger.
Okay.
Well, and they don't have the original Ouija board with them.
True.
Yeah. Oh, that's right. He bought another one. There's a scene where he bought another one.
Because they had the box, but it looks like Tawny Katane tried to...
And it says, like, milk, beer, eggs. Like there's, like, a freaking shopping list in there.
And, you know, it was, like, beer in cans.
In cans.
So yeah, they go to the dock, and they're doing this, the seance, or, you know, talking to the Ouija board, the witch board. And, I'm trying to think of so they're talking to David and Brandon's like, are you the one who got mad at the party and blew my tires? And it's like, yes. And it's like, are you the one who did this to Tawny Katane? It says no. And it's like, are you the one who killed Jim's friend? It's like no. So then they start figuring out like, oh wait, maybe it's not David.
Right.
So like, who did those things? And it just says like evil.
Right.
And then it says they're like, well, who is this evil or whatever? And it's like, evil is here or something like that.
Yeah,
and then a bunch of like barrels come flying off the.
They were set up right in front of a pile of barrels, like a Donkey Kong esque pile of barrels. Right. They get
it's sort of like a Final Destination situation.
Oh yeah.
So it knocks them like both off and off their chairs and Brandon goes into the water. Jim's knocked out and Brandon comes back out of the water. And you see the hatchet hammer come flying into frame and crack him in the head.
Yeah.
Which, again, it's always kind of surprising that they kill off a main character like that, like in the third act of the, you know what I mean?
Well, I wasn't
kind of
like surprising. It.
Yeah. It's kind of an unexpected thing.
What was also unexpected is when he's cradling his body, crying and screaming, whoa!
He shows much more love towards Brandon than he ever does towards Tawny Katane in this movie.
What I also found kind of surprising was just how much I was kind of like, oh, I'm disappointed. I kind of...
Yeah.
Of the three main characters, I guess he was the most entertaining.
Yeah. At least it clears up that love triangle thing, though.
Yeah.
It does. Yeah. This is true. You got to clean that up before the end of the movie.
So, I think then it goes back to Tawny Katane, and she gets attacked by the spirit, I think, in the apartment, right?
Yes.
Now, does he just leave Brandon's body there? How does he deal with this? Does he call the cops?
Does anybody think that he called the cops to report Brandon's death?
No.
I say no.
No, because he wakes up and he finds Brandon. Well, which is crazy because he's like sitting by the water and he's like looking for Brandon. Where's Brandon? And then like Brandon's hand comes out of the water and like grabs him.
Yeah.
But Brandon is dead.
Yeah.
So I don't know like what that was.
Maybe it was his last, like maybe he was dying and that was like his last.
I know, he had a hatchet in the head and he was in the water for like...
He had the Jason force.
Yeah.
It's the power of love, man.
Yeah.
It is.
Don't knock it.
So that's when he hugs him. He's crying and everything. But yeah, then it cuts to him just driving his car back to home and presumably leaving Brandon by the water.
And he's... Okay, so he gets home. The house is... Their apartment is like a wreck.
Mm-hmm.
He comes in and... And then Linda is full-on possessed by the...
Malfader
character. Yeah. And she's attacking him. And he's like, whoa, okay. You know, he's trying to settle it down.
That's when Circus Cop comes in, too.
Yeah!
And a crowd of, like, 10 people.
Yeah. I guess I was always a little uncertain on what was going on in this house.
Well, like, is the house apartments, or do they live in the whole house?
It seems to be...
No, it's... So Rosemary is their landlord?
Yeah. Rosemary's the landlady.
Okay.
Yeah, and so they're all in there kind of, like, walking, you know, watching this, like, possessed woman with an axe swinging at a gym. Mm.
Yeah.
And the cop comes in.
Yeah.
And what happens then, like...
Well, the cop's like, put down the... Because...
Jim has a gun.
Jim... Did he have the gun yet? I don't think... Because did he get that from the cop?
No, I think he had the...
I don't remember. He had something. Because Tawny Katane was, like, attacking him. And she was on the ground. And he was, like, holding... Oh, I think it was a letter opener. Because he, like,
said
with a letter opener.
That's right.
Yeah.
So he's like, drop the knife. And, you know, he, like, goes over to check on Tawny Katane. Like, oh, you're right. And she pops up and hits him with, like, the fire poke or whatever it is.
Yeah.
And then he drops his gun. And is like, what the hell? And he's on the ground. And so Jim grabs the gun and holds on her. And one thing I did like about this, because one thing my father and I always say about horror movies like this is that they always do these stupid, I love you, and fight the thing inside you thing, and then the person fights the demon inside them, and, you know.
Yeah.
You know.
This time it doesn't work.
So, yeah, this time they kind of go there where so she's on top of him choking him, and he's like, I love you, finally saying I love you, and she comes back, she's like, Jim? And he's like, yeah. And then he's like, oh, that's not going to work.
Yeah.
I was glad they kind of went with that because like,
yeah.
I forgot that they didn't go with that. And so when they were doing that, I was like, oh, God, I forgot that they did this. But then they went the other way with it.
And the demon like tries to trick Jim into shooting himself.
Yeah.
By trying to get Jim to believe that if Jim, telling Jim he is the portal.
Yeah.
Oh, by the way, we should mention there's a
the guy who never touched the Ouija board in the whole movie except that one scene near the end.
Right, he's never even touched it. How would he be? But right. when the carnival cop comes in, there's the line where Jim is like, Dewhurst, it's not what you think. You want to be like, yeah, it's so much worse. Right. There's another dead body up in Big Bear.
The cop even says, like, yeah, you think we didn't know about the mess you left up in Big Bear?
So the cop is completely useless and incapacitated for whatever reason.
Yeah.
So then how does he end up getting pushed out the window?
Well, because he ends up he starts shooting the Ouija board.
Like last minute before he shoots himself, he shoots the Ouija board, which like is like
some
starts floating and going, no, as the board is getting shot in slow motion. It's a bad guy getting shot
just
in action.
Just some great composite work. The best 1986.
And then he falls out the window with this bizarre POV.
Jack, when you said falls, there was a dramatic lack of air quotes on that.
They actually show on the behind the scenes things I was watching, they show the behind the scenes shot of that happening with like, because obviously it's not like a camera rig where he's like, but it's actually very slowly going out the window.
I would believe it.
Yeah. It's like you really, but as I'm watching, I'm like, you really thought this was gonna work? Like, look good?
And they didn't even speed it up.
No, I think they slowed it down actually.
Oh, really?
Yeah, because it looked a little quicker.
Well, there's something eerie about the look. I think if this movie were like 100 times better, this shot would have worked. Like if there were other creative shots in the film.
I think if they had done it at night, and the lighting had been controlled, it could have looked better. And they'd been able to open the iris a little bit so that there was, but. You know, also hats off to this movie. You don't see a lot of 80s horror films where the climax is happening in broad daylight, like at noon on a Tuesday. He falls out, lands in a car, and I'm like, okay, is he dead or what's
going
on? Cut
to a church.
Cut to a church.
Crying people, and of course.
They're kind of playing off that, but instead of a funeral,
it's a wedding.
Tawny Kitaen and Jim are getting married.
And he's
Jim
he's
in a
got,
tuxedo,
and,
tuxedo
a neck
brace. And a neck
brace.
Yeah.
So they couldn't wait until he healed a little bit there?
They planned and pulled off that wedding pretty quick. Yeah.
Yes.
I'm impressed.
Yeah. Yeah. With, you know, quite a crowd in attendance, including that other construction worker friend. I saw him in there. I was glad to see him.
How did he get his name cleared? Because who the hell is going to believe a cop that says, oh, he shot the Ouija board and that...
Oh, yeah, and the cop is unconscious for this. This is totally a dream house scenario. Yeah. There's no way Jim does not get sent away to prison for decades.
Yeah.
I mean, he... And there's
they
no
should
one
have had the cop officiating the wedding, too. Like, he's also the...
I was
praying... He does everything for that town.
Yeah. Yeah. It is a huge miss to not have the cop come in somehow in that wedding scene. You know, like,
he was actually the entertainment at the reception.
What if he had shown up and he was playing like a kazoo or something, like for the like Here Comes the Bride theme? You know? It's amazing. And then the last scene of the movie is Rosemarie and some unnamed character that we've never seen cleaning up this totally destroyed apartment. How are their lives okay? Like, nothing should be okay.
And again, I think this says more about me, probably. I'm watching that scene, I'm going, wait a second. How quickly did they plan a wedding, get married?
And then the apartment's still messed up.
Yeah. This must be a quickie wedding because Jim is going to prison for the rest of his life.
Now she doesn't have to testify against him.
Right.
It all makes sense now.
It does.
And they throw out the Ouija board or the planchette, and you know, someone's like, does it still? I bet it doesn't even work. And then it moves on its own.
Yes!
Well, the camera starts to focus on the S.
And then,
which by itself, okay, that works as like an ominous ending. But then the planchette just shows up and covers it. That just took it a little too far.
Jim should have popped in behind the landlord and be like, oh!
and that is the moment the movie jumped the shark. It almost stuck the landing.
I will say there are sequels to Witchboard.
And I do know for a fact Todd Allen does have a cameo in the sequel.
I've seen the second one.
It's the same character?
There's three of them. There's two sequels. I've seen the second movie, but I can't remember anything from it. I remember seeing like a boiler room. That's all I remember.
I was very curious, so I went on IMDb, and Todd Allen has a cameo as a garbage man in the second movie.
Well, he got out of prison. That's good.
Yeah.
You know, turned his life around.
Yeah. He did. He's got to get his life back together.
That should have actually, the more I think about it, that should have been the wedding. It should have just been Tawny Katane standing up at the altar by herself, mm-hmm. and everyone kind of looking around, and then, you know, them getting ready to be like, well, I guess he's not here. And then Jim appearing suddenly and being like, I'm here. Ah! She could be like, God damn it. How many times? I've talked to you about this.
And then it cuts to black and you hear her voice say, every damn time. And then the credits roll. And that's the end of the movie.
Also, Brandon, R.I.P.
Yeah, R.I.P. Brandon. Yeah. They do a little tribute to him.
I didn't even do it so wrong, it's right, because I know Cody knows this movie so well. I felt like there was no trivia question I was going to be able to bust out that he wouldn't already know. I'm fascinated. This DVD we're looking at has commentary.
There's the Blu-ray. This is from 2004. The Blu-ray just came out recently, and there's like newer features and stuff on it. So they really put some effort into... which word?
Whoa.
I'm almost tempted. Honest to God.
I'm going
to
buy it.
They had it at the store down the road, but it's like $20. Like, I don't want to spend $20 on a witch board. I already own it.
Yeah.
Up until that point, you know, Bear or Big Bear, I'm just kind of like, this might be the worst movie we've seen for the podcast.
Yeah.
Now, no, second worst. Mortal Kombat Annihilation is still worse.
Yeah. I wouldn't put that. I don't know. This wouldn't even be in my top 10 of stuff that we've done.
Well, you know.
The second half of this movie. And the second half really saves it. I mean, we were going into dark place, and then it comes together.
Yeah.
It's just so bad through the first half, but then it just leans right into it to the point where now it's so bad it's
good. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I would listen to that. I'm almost tempted to listen to that commentary track just to hear some of the thoughts of it.
Like, who's on the... I assume the director?
The director, the producer? Well, the director, writer. I have
commentary with writer-director Kevin S. Tenney, executive producer Walter Jostin, and producer Jeff Jeffrey.
No.
That's a made-up name.
Well, his name is
Jeff Jeffrey.
Geoffrey or Jeffrey? I'm assuming it's Jeffrey.
It's pretty close. Wow. Jeffrey. Bold move by his parents. All right. So let's do it. Is Jefferson it so bad? It's good.
John Thompson.
Cody, I'll let you start because I think we all.
Oh yeah, absolutely. Yeah. I've seen this movie. I don't know, seven, eight times probably in the last 20 years.
Yeah. I'll follow. This is a weird one. I mean, like I said, I kind of appreciated it because it's trying. Mm-hmm. It's not lazy. The cinematography is lazy, but nothing else is lazy. I think it is. The second half of this saves it. I mean, feel free to be doing other things as you watch the first half of the movie.
And I was.
Yeah. check your email during the first half. But, like, as soon as I get in the car for Big Bear, like, it's on. You know, this movie's pretty fun from that point forward. And anything involving the carnival cop is...
I forgot about the cop.
Seeing.
Yeah, I always remember the psychic.
Maybe it's everything from the psychic on.
Yeah,
the medium
on. That definitely helps spur the trip up to Big Bear and like
that stuff in motion.
Yeah.
So thank you, Zara Beth.
Yeah. So I'm gonna say yes. I'm gonna say yes. And this is Jack. What do you think?
Absolutely. So bad it's good. It's fantastic. I think that it's got so much to poke fun at, and it's unique at the same time. It works.
Yeah. And Nick, did it
kind of... It starts off so bad, and just when you think it can't get any worse, it totally redeems itself by getting even worse than you would have expected.
Yeah.
Or just very different from what you would have expected.
Mm-hmm. Maybe not worse. It did inspire me to look at Tawny Katane's Wikipedia page, and man, she's had a tough life. Like,
about halfway through the movie, I looked her up, and there's a reason when she starts kicking Jim... towards the end of the movie, I kind of had a dark chuckle.
She's had a tough go. Wow.
She was at ScareCon a couple years ago.
Oh, really?
That's the one I didn't go to. I would have brought this and had her sign it.
Wow.
By the way, I can't tell you how excited I was when I found this movie on DVD when it first came out, because we rented it from the video store back when they had video stores, kids. On VHS. And it was one of those movies. It was that and like Spookies, which we've done, which I remember seeing and being like, oh my God, that movie's ridiculous. And I found that like in Walmart, we went to one night and I was like, oh my God, it's on DVD. And I bought it. I was so excited.
I'm impressed that this made it to DVD.
With bonus features, too.
Like that's, yeah, that's pretty good. It's an Anchor Bay disc. Okay, that's nice at Anchor Bay. They put good effort into stuff. Wow. All right, well, yeah, this one brings to a close. We've got another movie coming up for Horrible Halloween that we're going to decide on right now. And we'll be back very soon. All right, see you next time.